There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to a new series of The Home Recording Guide. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined by Matt Knight.
Hello there.
And in this series, the same as before, we're going to attempt to make a track using only what is available to us on Presonus Studio One. Now, Matt and I both use Studio One Sphere, which is the monthly program. It costs like sub $15 a month, and you get absolutely everything that Presonus make for Studio One, including a whole bunch of fantastic plugins. But of course, you can just buy one of the Presonus basic two-channel interfaces, from your local guitar store, and you'll get Studio One Artist with that, which is their mid-level DAW. And that still comes with a whole bunch of excellent plugins and features, and also the ability to use third-party plugins. And if you don't want to do that, or if you just fancy trying out Studio One, then it's actually completely free. And you can get the simple basic version of Studio One. And to be honest, it comes with all the tools you'll need. I actually doubt virtually anything that we're going to use on this podcast series will be things unavailable on the basic version. Maybe some, but not many. All the links you'll need to get started are in the description of this podcast. And of course, you can visit presonus.com for more details. Now, this being the first episode in the series, we've decided to get some help from an expert. In the last series, I muddled through, and I think we ended up with a pretty solid end product. But as you, the listener, pointed out, I did basically finish the series by using about £1,000 worth of Isotope plugins to polish the end product, and you called me out on that. So this time, we're going to learn how to do it without the need for expensive third-party plugins. We're going to do everything inside of the box. So we reached out to the man who essentially taught me how to use a DAW, both for mixing and mastering. And thanks to his excellent YouTube channel and instructional videos on Studio One's Sphere Learning platform, Nashville producer, podcaster, home studio corner creator, Joe Gilder is joining us. Joe, welcome to the podcast, and thank you for joining us. There you go.
What a great intro.
That was a good intro. I was pretty happy with that. It was good. That was good. I think it sounded organic and flowy. I was quite happy with that.
Let's just end it there. That was great.
That's it. Thank you very much for tuning in, dear listener. We'll see you next week. But thank you very much, Joe, for coming on the podcast. It's wonderful to have you on an episode. Thank you. Yeah, we do plenty of, last year we did it. Matt, you and me did an interview episode every single week. We actually haven't done any this year. I think Joe is the first one for 2021,
Was it last year? Where does the time go?
It was last year, because this year I was like, well, we did too many interviews last year. I'm just exhausted from it. Let's do none. And so this is actually the first one of 2021, but it is great for me to have you on an episode, because normally we'll do sort of, I don't know, like effects brands, guitar companies, luthiers, amp brands, mm-hmm. people like that, maybe the occasional artist, but they're always people that that we know, that we've dealt with before. And to be honest, that sort of side of MI is a very well-trodden path for us. But of course, the home recording guide is something that started for Guitar Nerds really off the back of the, you know, the pandemic and quarantine and people needing to find a new outlet for recording as there are no gigs. And so for me, this is great because I've not met you before this podcast, but you've actually had a massive impact on my sort of ability to record at home. Certainly you joining Presonus, which I think was at the start of 2020, which was only a couple months later did I sort of get the first copy of Studio One, and you'd started doing videos for that. And I kind of adamantly watched those to teach me how to use a DAW. So it's lovely to actually finally get to meet you and talk to you about these things, because really you've everything you've done has been such a kind of accommodating, easy access and kind of beginner friendly sort of package for getting into recording. There's my tongue up your bum for the first for the first couple of minutes.
I'm flattered, thank you.
excellent. But to give listeners, if they're not aware of all the incredible things you've done, you've used Studio One since it started, right? Since the first iteration.
Pretty close. I think I started with version 2, but it's been close to 8-9 years now.
Right. I see. So that was like, because you previously, you worked at Sweetwater, right? And then you went on to a distributor who distributed Studio One. And is that's how you got into Studio One, moved over from Pro Tools?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was working at Sweetwater when Presonus came to announce that Studio One was coming out. And of course, we thought it was the dumbest idea, because why do we need another DAW? And we smirked and we're all sure of ourselves. But yeah, when I had to start, I would do some trainings and things at music stores, and I figured, man, I'm not going to look credible if I don't know the software. So I started using it just for that purpose, did like a podcast episode in it, mixed a song in it. And the next thing I knew, I'd bought a new computer for the studio and I didn't even install Pro Tools. Like, I couldn't even find the installer because I hadn't opened it in so long. So it was a weird, like, especially being on YouTube, it would make sense that you use the most popular DAW. One time my wife said, "Hey, do you think you should go back to Pro Tools? You might get more viewers." It's like, I can't now. I'm too far gone. But yeah, it won me over with a bunch of just little things that it did that made my life easier. And it really wasn't something I set out to do. It just happened.
Before you started at Presonus, you'd very much become, I guess, the spokesperson on YouTube for Studio One. You were certainly, if you were to look for how to do something on Studio One on YouTube, you will inevitably come up with a home studio corner video of how to do that. And that's kind of that's the name of your YouTube channel and your website and the vehicle by which you provide. You provide not only a bunch of free content, but paid content as well for how to actually use the platform. And absolutely. I guess Home Studio Guide's been going for like a decade.
Yeah.
It was. It seems like the Home Studio Guide was kind of a fantastic way to get people into the platform and to get and because it's exclusively Studio One based, the Home Studio Corner, and it was beforehand, right, as well?
It was actually my first few years I was in Pro Tools, and then when I switched, I just kept rolling with the switch. So yeah, I still get people asking me about 10-year-old Pro Tools videos, and I don't know the answer. I'm sorry. But I do try to, as much as if you use Studio One and you watch my videos, then that's a big bonus. But I also try to keep it somewhat software agnostic. So if you're not using it, you can still get some value and apply, you know, what EQs I did on your system fairly easily.
Go on, Matt.
Sorry, Joe. I was going to say, or should I say Joe Branton? Because we've got two Joes. It's going to get very confusing. I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, for me, you know, coming at it again, very, very fresh and having seen loads of things, you're like, oh, well, I've got a Mac, like maybe I should use Logic. And it's like, oh, well, I've gone to a studio and they use Pro Tools. And then, you know, you hear, you see loads of people on YouTube now, a lot of YouTubers using Ableton. Mm-hmm. And then there's other people making doors. It can be quite a confusing thing even to start there. So if you make some tips and tricks that generally are universal, they're all going to do similar things, mm-hmm. it kind of makes a little bit, I think, people feel a bit more at ease, really.
Yeah, because as much as Personas probably hates when I say this, you can do this with any of them, right? They all essentially do the same thing. Just like you can play an incredible guitar part, I'm guessing you probably have more than one guitar. So, yes. Understatement of the year.
Yeah.
You know, and you could play a great rock tune on any number of guitars and make it work. It's kind of the same way. They all do it differently. You get there a little bit differently, but they all take your audio and do stuff with it.
In fact, on last week's episode of the regular guitar podcast, we were talking about doors, and Naomi, one of our hosts on the other one, said it's actually about finding the door that speaks to you, the one that actually makes you feel creative. And she was saying about how she'd spent years on Pro Tools, and it wasn't until she switched over to I think she uses Ableton. I think she said it wasn't until she switched over to Ableton she was like, oh, this is how I do stuff. And it wasn't, you know, that wasn't any negative statement on Pro Tools. It was just for her particularly, a different door spoke to her. And I could definitely say the same. I've had Logic on my computer and been absolutely rubbish at recording for years. And it wasn't until I was like, oh, this Studio One free thing that's cool. And then just because it had such a lot of very easily accessible video guides on how to get started, and all the inbuilt stuff was very good. And one thing that was quite important for me, which is, you know, as we told, that I banged on to one of our dear listeners on the last series of this, one of the things that was important to me was MIDI programming instruments. And it's just such a breeze on Studio One, even the free version. And actually the amount of synths and drum machines that you get on the free version, just I was like, oh, well, this is great. You know, it had all the tools for me to make something that sounded a bit like Radiohead's Kid A, and that was me kind of done. And you know, it was
not a bad place to be.
Yeah, 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 exactly. But yeah, let's talk a bit about the home studio corner, because that's your website and how you impart your knowledge onto the world. But it was a really, it's a very useful website. And one of the reasons that your videos are so appealing, and I think why our listeners, you know, should definitely check them out if they haven't already, and one of the reasons we got so involved in them, is that there's a complete kind of lack of snobbery with your approach to the studio. You very much approach it from kind of a simple level. A lot of your stuff is about how to make home studio setups work, and you know, at a really simple level if you're recording in your room. I guess kind of what made you focus on kind of that end of things rather than anything else?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it started for me when just trying to name the website and the YouTube channel. I originally wanted to have, you know, as broad of an audience as possible. So it was going to be something generic, like just having to do with anything related to audio. And then I started to think, well, this group, like who can I speak to, like with confidence, like that I've been there, I've done that. I would consider myself at least some level of an expert. And it, you know, live sound wasn't it. Working in big studios wasn't it. You could drop me in a studio and I could make it work and I'd be fine. But it wasn't like I'd been doing that for years, right? The predominant place where I'd done most of my music was in a home studio. So I thought, well, why don't I just talk about what I know and see how that goes. That's me using, you know, not really, I don't think I have anything, maybe one or two microphones you might consider somewhat expensive, but for the most part, I just use stuff that's fun and just try to make it sound good. And I don't focus on, like, I rarely do reviews just because I'd rather talk about what you're going to use the pedal for versus what the pedal does. If, you know, to steal from your world, but yeah, I'm much more interested. Like, I used just the stock plugins in Studio One for years just because I didn't care about learning a bunch of new plugins. I just wanted to make a new album or a new EP or write some new songs. And I think that, I don't know if it comes from a place of laziness or just I'm just a bumpkin from Mississippi or something, but I just wanted to keep it simple and people seem to connect with it, which is cool.
But that, it seems to be the kind of the right place to focus when you're when you're talking about these sort of things, because it means that you're focusing on the actually making the music. I mean, this is something that I get accused of a lot on the Guitar Nerds podcast, is that, you know, I am and I suffer from gas to quite an extreme level in which, you know, that I the amount of equipment I have here is ridiculous. Matt, of course, you suffer from this as well. Matt has the impossible rig, which is his bedroom rig consists of, I don't know, what, 4 amp heads and about 6 cabs, I don't know, and 3 pedal boards.
And I think that's, I guess that's why we're sort of here now. It's like, should probably put some of this to work in some ways, you know, kind of actually, you know, record at least one note, you know, for my grandkids and go, you know, I bought all this gear. What did you do with it? Oh, well, nothing that you'll ever hear. Unfortunately, though, that going down this route has led to wanting more stuff. But I'm trying to...
Sure. I've spent more money on plugins since we started doing this than anything else.
Yeah, and that's where I think me and Joe have started to differ, because I've started to get a couple more hardware bits. You know, things like, right, I didn't have a DI box, and, you know, I probably do need maybe a more up-to-date interface. Mine's maybe 20 years old. So I'm surprised it's still chugging along. Mm-hmm. But that's why I like things like... Sorry, Joe, go on.
I was just going to say, the problem with the internet is that once you buy a plugin... And every single social media platform will only advertise to you other deals by other plugin brands. And that is a slippery slope, which a frail mind like mine has just, you know, yeah, it's been bad. Hence this series where we're going to try to do everything inside of the box, which, you know, as I said, is a great reason to get you on board, Joe, because you're, you know, as you say, fantastic at just using the stuff that's immediately available to you. And certainly I will say that, like, the Fat Channel on Studio One has been an absolute bread and butter for me on everything, especially when it comes to recording bass. I found it to be like there's some wonderful presets on there. There's like a wonderful, like, vintage kind of valve compressor preset for bass that gives you, you know, it presets in quite a nice EQ, just with the mids cut a little bit, and if you sort of mess around with that and just push the input a bit on that, I kind of found I didn't need to be relying on a lot of the amp sims and cab sims that I'd had. It actually, if you've got a good sounding bass off the bat, that Fat Channel almost on its own was a fantastic tool. And that kind of got me thinking that realistically, all these tools are available to me. It's just I buy into everything else a little bit. But I guess the other side
of it, that maybe it makes you excited, and just having that new tool gets you in the studio and makes you, you know, like, there's that side of it too. Maybe you need a few extra toys to entice you and inspire you to make some music.
That is definitely true. Yes, yes, I'm definitely at my most productive when I've got something new. I think that's something that a lot of people with our level of gas suffer with. But yeah, to get on to kind of talking about, you know, actually how you can help us into making a better track than we did last time. One of the things that one of the first things that I think you introduce everyone to when they're kind of getting into mixing is teaching people a workflow about mixing. And you had one of the things you have is your 5-step mix guide, I wondered if you could kind of like talk us through and you know, just make sure we're ticking all the boxes on that sort of thing.
Yeah. So first of all, if you bristle at the idea of five-step mixes. Like, that sounds ridiculous. I totally understand. It's not that I'm telling you do this and this and this and your mix will be done. It's more like plug your mix into this formula and make sure you hit all these stages, and you'll probably end up getting better results. So this came out of both my own experience and also just hearing from hundreds and hundreds of people who are struggling to get their mixes to sound good. Typically, when folks are just learning to mix, this is kind of how it goes. They turn up the kick drum, and they spend a half hour EQ and compressing the kick drum. Then they turn up the snare drum, repeat. And they just go down the line sequentially, turning up each thing and then throwing a bunch of plugins on it until they get to the end and they listen. And most likely it's just garbage. Because
that's exactly what I do.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes sense. It's logical. Why would you do it any other way? Coming from, you know, not doing it to trying it, that's just a logical way to do it. The problem is it has you listening to everything one piece at a time, and it doesn't have you putting it together in any sort of cohesive way. So, you know, how do you know what to do to the kick drum if you don't know what the rest of the drums sound like or what the bass sounds like? How can you really make any decisions about that? And so instead, what I talk to people about, like, the first step is just getting the mix set up. That's the boring stuff. It's color coding, it's phase checking and blah, forget that. That's the first step. But once you've got it set up, second step for me is you're not allowed to use plugins yet. So the second step is to just do what we call a static mix, which is just, you're allowed to touch volume and panning and that's it. Because a lot of people, you know,
right,
they just bought 8 new plugin bundles, right? And they want to go slap those suckers on there and make the needles dance, but it's just not time yet. Because if you put a bunch of plugins and then try to balance later, you're going to have a hard time. You need to get a good balanced mix with just the audio that's there. Which then if you say, but yeah, my audio sounds terrible, then you need to rewind a bit. Let's go back and make sure we recorded it well before we get to this point. It's kind of a self-correcting process. But you might spend, you know, if it's a regular rock mix, you know, you got drums, bass, couple guitars, keys, vocals, it wouldn't be unheard of to spend 20, 30 minutes just moving faders and panning. And what happens a lot of times is you get in this zone and you kind of forget that you haven't had any plugins. And you suddenly get to a point where, hey, this actually sounds really good. And then it dawns on you, holy crap, I haven't even put on a plugin yet. That's, at that point is where you want to start thinking about plugins. If you put them on too early, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot. You're fixing problems that aren't really problems yet. You know, like people who get home, I'm sure you encounter people who are super obsessed with any like noise in their guitar signal. But can you hear it in the mix with everything else? If the answer is no, then you're obsessed about something that doesn't really matter, right?
Right.
Unless it's like Jeff Buckley, Hallelujah, and it's just a guitar, then yeah, we probably want that one to be clean. But if it's 8 guitars and a slamming drum part, who cares if there's some buzz in the guitars? So this kind of helps you, as you're doing the static mix, helps you hear, okay, where are the, once I've set these levels and got everything kind of in the right place, now what are the big problems that I need to face? And that's the next step, which is fix those problems. And then the next step is what I call top-down mixing, which is let's put some plugins on the drum bus over all the drums first, and then worry about the individual drums. Because sometimes you can make it happen with just a few plugins on a bus instead of, you know, throwing 8 plugins on every channel of your drums.
Right.
And then the last step is kind of how you finish things off.
And I've seen, like, you know, from a very basic perspective, I think that's one of the most useful things that you'd taught me off the bat, was that after you're looking at something that's been recorded, where you've got maybe, mm-hmm. you know, if you've built your drums, you know, which is whatever, 6, 8 different tracks, and then you've got, you know, a couple of basses in there, maybe if you were recording, you know, if you're mm-hmm. like me, and then you've got, you know, a bunch of guitars and vocals, like even without vocals, like maybe you're looking at 6, 7 guitars and then a couple of keyboards, like those are mm-hmm. that's a big bunch of tracks to kind of go through one by one. And the mm-hmm. idea of kind of bussing things just so that you're breaking down every individual instrument into its own category, I found that the most useful thing from a basic level. Mm-hmm.
I kind of skipped over that. That's kind of that first step. So my template that I use for mixing has a bus for drums, bass, acoustic, electric, keys, vocals, background vocals. So that's kind of the 7 things I tend to find when I'm mixing. So you can give me a song with, I did one a couple weeks ago that had like 50 something tracks, But once I grouped them all and put them in their right buses, it was maybe 10 buses total. Right. And so, which is easier to mix, 50 or 10? 10's easier. And then you kind of compartmentalize it. So let's just, here are all the horn parts. Let's put them on a bus and just listen to them as one unit. Oh, okay. Now I kind of know where I want to go with that. Versus, here I go EQing horn 1 of 20. Like, that might not be necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Yeah, it's a fantastic way of kind of simplifying it. And that's kind of, I guess that's the essence of your five-step mix guide, is just getting things into kind of a state where you can do things very easily, rather than having to deal with everything, you know, on the kind of the minute level. The other thing that you did that was fantastic on your YouTube channel, and you've had a number of series of this, was the Mix Together series, which is a great way of kind of guiding people on how to do something from scratch. Can you talk to us a bit about like your Mix Together series, and for people who sure. might be just getting Studio One for the first time, why these series would be a great thing for them?
Absolutely. So I've, you know, since early on, I was doing YouTube, and I would also do these different courses, right? Teaching how to use EQ, how to mix and things like that. But I wanted to have something like that was available for free too, for folks that just either just didn't want it or couldn't afford it, or just wanted to find something free on YouTube. So I started this series, and I've done 4 seasons of it now. Seasons, that sounds so pretentious. It's called Mix Together. And so I just pick a song. Sometimes it was submitted by a user, sometimes it was one of my songs. And I would just literally mix it in, you know, 15, 20 minute chunks on YouTube from start to finish. So some of them last a really long time, and some of them don't take as long. But it's just they don't like get tons and tons of views, because it's a commitment. I'm going to sit down. If I'm going to do this, I'm going to watch all of them, but you can also get the tracks and mix it along with me. So it's just an easy like way to kind of dip your toes into it and see what it's like, and kind of what all is involved in taking tracks and getting
them
where
you want them to go. That's the best bit, because you provide actually the tracks for everyone to download, and to, so people can literally mix with you and real time do the things and see the effects, which I find is so much more helpful, actually getting to do the things and being like, oh right, that's how this works.
And I will say one of the things that helped me get so much better at the recording and producing side of things was mixing a lot of songs. Because you're getting inside the producer's head, you're hearing each guitar part, and it starts to click. Oh, this is why they did that. Or, wow, it took 10 guitars to get this sound. All those kinds of things. I mean, yes, you learn mixing, but you also learn a ton about just how to record and how to produce things to make them to where they will sound good once they're mixed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was one of the things I like most about the Mix Together series, is that because, as you say, it's kind of longer format. It's you are literally mixing whilst you film that. It's not polished. You're not editing out, things. And I loved that about it. Like, I think in season four, you were doing like this, like there was the episode on how to mix guitars and bass. Mm-hmm. And you mixed the bass, isolated the bass, did a bunch of stuff on the EQ, and then you added back in the drums, and you were like, no, I'm not I don't actually know if now that I'm hearing this together that this is exactly what it needs to be, sort of thing. And it was that sort of human element of how a mix works, that you know you're not always going to do these things, and then when you put everything else in, it be the right decision. It's a great way to kind of get an organic feel for kind of, yeah, I guess to be prepared for the mistakes that you will make in mixing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Cause it's not helpful if I edit all that stuff out and just show, make just nailing it every time. It's like Dude Perfect in their trick shots. Like, we know they tried 1800 times to hit that basketball shot from 300 yards away. So when you see just the one time where they nailed it, it looks cool. But you know, anyway, so that, I think that's been something I've tried to keep in kind of everything I do. Like when I make a mistake, just laugh at it and be like, that was terrible. And let's just move on. Cause that lets people know, oh, right. Everybody has to kind of dig a while to finally get there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, me and Matt are going to try and do everything for this track using the built-in Studio One plugins. Matt, you want to, obviously, you want to record some kind of organic guitars.
Yeah, not that. I've got a couple of, I've got a little TR-08 drum machine and a JU-06 synth and a Moog, which obviously, you know, it's got some sort of classic sounds to it. Mm-hmm. And I've got so many pedals as well. So I kind of want to, you know, mm-hmm. I've got a radial reamper and a J48 DI box. So I kind of want to try and do a bit more stuff with external hardware as well. So, you know, like if I'm recording a dry guitar track or a dry synth track, that I'm actually sending stuff out into hardware, where I know, you know, Joe, you're going to try and do more stuff in the plugin. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to try and combine that in the track. But obviously with guitars as well, I kind of want to like mic up some amps and try some different stuff there. I don't hate plugins, but I am definitely one of many guitar players and many who are listeners of the podcast who have like, but I've spent so much money on amplifiers. I don't dare like go into the realm of plugins. And
sure,
you know, trying to get used to playing through monitors or headphones is a totally different thing if you're hearing mm-hmm. amps in the room so much. Mm-hmm. So trying to capture a bit of that vibe as well, I guess, in our next track.
Biggest piece of advice I can give, especially for guitars, is when you are playing the amp in the room, it's amazing, right? Like, I'm God's gift to everyone's ears. But then you come back the next day and listen to what you recorded and it sounds almost nothing like it. You know, we've all been there. Mm. I think the big thing to do is like, I'm all for it. I love cranking an amp and just going to town. But the kind of make a part of your process where you stop, put the guitar down and just listen to what you just recorded through mm-hmm. your speakers or headphones, just to make mm-hmm. sure it's in the same ballpark. Cause it's going to feel amazing while the amp's blaring at 2000 decibels in your room, mm. but it's going to sound very, very different on the recording. Hopefully not, but it's probably going to be at least a little bit different. And you may find out that, oh man, I put the mic in the completely wrong spot. It sounds terrible. And you've got a chance to fix that before you go and do 80 takes of guitar.
Yeah. And I think as well, something I was doing the other week when we were actually on a film shoot recording some amps. And obviously, when you're close miking an amp with an SM57, it's very mm-hmm. different to how your ears perceive, obviously, all the pressure and changes sound in the room. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we had to put another mic in the room just to give mm-hmm. us another flavor of what's actually going on, because everything is close mic. So, again, what you're hearing is the mm-hmm. sound traveling several feet to your ears, where what you're capturing is the sound traveling several inches to your microphone. Right. And that's a totally different thing as well.
Yeah, it's like, well, go ahead and put your ear that close and then you'll know what that sounds like.
Yes. Yeah. He's,
don't do that. Surgeon General warning, please don't.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of recording guitars and, you know, the things you've done before, do you find just, do you go straight into the interface and you're using plugins to kind of change that audio source, or are you trying to use a higher quality DI? I've watched over the past few months, watched many people argue on the internet about, oh, you don't need a DI box. And some people are like, oh, no, you've got to have a, you know, me and Joe over Christmas were talking about Radial's HDI DI box for bass players and keyboard players. It's like £900. You're like, it looks good because it's expensive.
Yeah, of course it does.
So yeah, what do you normally do, or how do you approach that?
Predominantly, I've done a little bit of everything. I used 11 rack for a whole record once just to put it through its paces. And it was I just said I'm going, and it was 11 rack as the amp and then still pedal board into it.
Right.
But using it to kind of be the pedal platform. And it was cool. Like it did a thing. But last several that I've done have been predominantly through my Fender Deluxe with pedals, with just like a Cascade Fathead in front of it. Cause it's a nice fat sounding mic that doesn't get super shrill no matter where you place it. Mm-hmm. That tends to capture it the way I'm kind of hearing it in the room, which is cool. But yeah, obviously Studio One comes with Ampire, which is a cool amp modeler thing. So I've messed with that a lot lately, especially being on with Personas. And when I do that, I just plug into the interface. So the interface has a guitar input. I'm sure a 900 pound radial thing would be better. but yeah, I'm, at the same time, it's like, hey, it sounds like a guitar plugged into an amp. So that's cool too. I do like that because you can skip that middle step of stopping and going back and listening, because what you're hearing out of the speakers is what it sounds like. And I do like that. And I like being able to go from, I've got some, you know, maybe my pedal board into the digital amp and my software, but then I could maybe throw my favorite stereo delay plugin that I just use normally in mixing on the guitar too. So I'm getting like a cool stereo delay that I wouldn't get with my amps, because I'm not going to set up a stereo rig because I like myself. And so it ends up being kind of a cool hybrid place where I can get a little bit of, you know, what's this plugin I was using on a vocal the other day? Let me throw it on the guitar track and see what it sounds. Oh, that's really cool. And then I can play through that and get something cool. So
yeah,
I'm not against either. I've wanted like a Helix or a Headrush for forever just to see what that experience is like. But yeah, the one thing I do like to do as, because I think I'm just an old curmudgeon when it comes to this, is I don't like recording a DI and then reamping. Giving myself that out. I was going to ask you about the
pipeline thing.
Yeah. Pipeline's cool for what you guys are talking about. Matt, you were talking about sending stuff back out. So I did a video on that not long ago where I ran like a drum track through my pedal board using the pipeline plugin in Studio One, which is basically you stick it anywhere in your plugin chain and it becomes like a patch point that you can send stuff out your interface through whatever hardware you have and then come back in at that same spot in the plugin. But yeah, as far as like just straight up guitar recording, I'd much rather just put a mic in front of the amp, get it right, than record the DI and give myself the option to redo it later. Cause I think I would just skimp on the first one and always go back and redo it versus just get it right the first time.
And do you use any sort of, what sort of thing do you use for the microphone? So I'm assuming microphone straight into the interface rather than maybe running into some other preamps.
I've done a lot just straight into the interface. I do have a couple of, I don't know if you remember, Personas used to make these really nice tube preamps called the ADL series.
Yeah, I remember
ADL 600.
They were great.
Beautiful black with like chrome switches. They don't make them anymore. I guess that we just didn't sell enough, but I got a couple of those, the single channel strip with like a compressor and EQ and then a two channel tube pre that is currently dead. So really selling this hard right now, but I'll go through those for a little extra niceness. But it's one of those things. It's nice. It sounds good, but in a pinch when like the tube's blown on the stereo one, I just plug it in regular and it works fine too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of those things like you can always like that DI. You could, there's always going to be a better option. Like I've got a Les Paul Studio. I know that a Les Paul Custom will be better, but it doesn't mean I'm not going to make some great music with the one I have. And it doesn't mean someone's going to listen and say, oh man, I can hear that that's a studio, you know?
I think that's where myself and some of the people listening are, and one of the biggest tips that people have said to me, and again, I just always knew it and then never put it into practice, was kind of have everything at your fingertips, like plugged in and ready. Like the last thing you want to do is like plug in a bunch of cables and this, that, and the other. And until you've got that set up, there is always like, oh, well, I could add this or I could add that. And you kind of almost want to set your studio up, your home studio, I guess, up as your instrument and then go, right, what can I do with this? Like sort of learn your pedal board almost, you know, what can I get out of my pedal board? Mm-hmm. I don't need to add anything else because I'm still exploring with it. Kind of the same thing with setting up a studio, I guess. It's kind of like choose your weapons and stick with them and learn them and understand how you can bend them and manipulate them to what you need.
Yeah. And it's really fun to do that as you're recording a new project. So like I can think back to I've released like 50-ish songs of my own stuff in the last 10 years. And like each little EP, I can remember, that's the one where I got that telly and I was super into the telly right then. And then that's the one where I was like super into the blues driver and I was just like, you're going to be my drive for this album. And then, you know, that's the one where I got that new keyboard. So like, it's kind of like each one has its own like hallmark. That was the piece of gear I was really into for that album. It's a fun way to approach it. I'll tell people, like, they'll say, hey, should I get a new guitar? And I'll say, okay, have you made an album with the one you have? And if the answer is no, I'm like, well, I'm not your mom, but I'd go make a record real quick. And then maybe that's your reward once you've made a record. But
yeah,
there's no right or wrong.
I think, it's just so easy to fall down that rabbit hole. But I think it's about just trying a couple of things and then finding I mean that's what I found is I started to find a few things that worked and then I was like, right, okay, just have that set up and then ready to go. And then, you know, the recording side, you know, you're always sort of experimenting and finding new things, and that it's, to me, the mixing was the big thing that, you know, I'll probably move on to in a few months once I've got a few more ideas down, but it is the most daunting thing when you do it for the first time, because I was looking at it the other day and I was like, how do you even start, like the very first mix you do, like what are you even supposed to do, you know? I remember like 20 years ago it's like, I guess I just set everything to the same level. You know, and I guess that's where, you know, I'm coming from. It's like, yeah, what can you remember your first mix, like just going like, how,
oh yeah,
I start,
yeah. I went to I got my degree at a little school outside of Nashville that had a recording program, so we learned about, you know, how to set up big studios and do patch bays and handle big consoles, but really never talked about mixing. So like when I sat down to start doing mixing seriously, I was kind of like, oh no, like I know what a compressor does, I could like write a paper on what a compressor does, but I have no clue when and why and how and where. But yeah, and like even bigger picture, like you were saying, Matt, like where do I start? So I would do the thing we were talking about where we'll go left to right. When I get all the way to the right, I'm hopefully done. And it didn't work super well.
Yeah. I guess it's just a case of, you know, diving into something like your 5-step mix guide or whatever, and just kind of going, you've got to do it. I mean, I guess the good thing is, as much as recording in a studio from the 1960s was obviously amazing, and I've seen some, there's a crazy guy on YouTube, a very, very small channel, but he'll mix live. I've seen him do like he'll mix Bohemian Rhapsody live. So he's got all of the feeds and, you know, stemmed it all into a mixing desk, and and that's obviously incredible. Sure. But I guess we're at an advantage now with technology that nothing's sort of final until you've bounced the whole thing out. You can go back, you know, you can go back.
But that's
back
my
on
kryptonite
mistakes.
That's why I don't record anything into amps since discovering plugins. I'm like, everything's straight in. This is the worst thing for me. I can never settle on anything. I'm constantly
You could be like at step, you know, 95%, the mix is almost done, and then you go and redo all your guitar tones. Because you can.
Exactly. It's like there might be an offer on X plugin, and I'm like, oh, that guitar plugin does sound good. What does it do? Oh, it does a Fender Deluxe plugin just like the other five I have, but maybe this one's better. In fact, it was $5 more. Yeah, exactly, exactly. But that's I guess that's what we're going to avoid. I mean, I banged on a load about the Waves Ampeg range of plugins recently, which mm-hmm. I really liked, but that was kind of before I tried the Empire version of that, and I was like, this does the same thing, and it actually came with my software package.
and now you're rethinking your entire life.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm gonna use that, and I think, you know, Matt, you're gonna try and record real amps. So I guess any additional guitars I add, I've been having a lot of fun with the Ampire Vox AC30 sounds, and do you know what, it is a lot easier than me lugging up my Vox from the garage to my studio. Right. So I'm gonna try and use that, but I guess, Joe, are there any recommendations on the built-in plugins from Studio One that we could use that you think are absolute essentials? Like, I've seen you use the Pro EQ on everything. I've mentioned the Fat Channel. Mm-hmm. I find the presets on the Fat Channel to be so fantastic. Mm-hmm. It almost doesn't matter what I've recorded in. I can almost be like, oh, there's going to be a preset on the Fat Channel that I almost won't have to touch that will make everything sound better.
Yeah. So I would say kind of workflow / plugin is get your buses set up like we talked about, and then play with the Fat Channel on the bus of whatever you're working on. So like if it's drums, then do, you know, the FET comp and kind of into like the vintage EQ and mess with that a little bit and see, like, I always play a game with myself. Like, how good can I make this sound? Like, the first game is how good can I make it sound just raw recording? And then how good can I make it sound with just doing a static mix? And then how good can I make it sound with just one plugin on the bus? And I think it comes from laziness, because if I can get it done with one, why would I need to go through the 2 more hours of 16 more plugins? But it's also, sometimes you end up with, and this isn't right for every style of music, but for the stuff that I do, if you get a killer drum sound and you throw a nice bus compressor on there and EQ it a little bit, sometimes it's amazing. And anything else you do on the kick or snare drum just makes it worse. Not always, but occasionally. So the Fat Channel to me is super great. I use Pro EQ all the time when I need to kind of be more surgical and go move this one set of frequencies from the vocal or the lead guitar, things like that. And then the Red Light Distortion is one of my secret favorites. It's just a distortion plugin. Uh-huh. It's just great. It can add grit to that clean P bass part that's just, you know, getting lost in the mix, or even a little grit to the snare drum or the overall drum mix sometimes, or, you know, generally not on guitars because I've already got those gritty as I want, but vocals can be really cool too.
The guy who I knew who initially had Studio One, who was the guy who, like, his mixes just sounded incredible, and I was using I was using Pro Tools or Logic. I was using mostly Logic at the time, and this guy had Studio One. Everything he did was fantastic, and he was like, well, you know, it's free, and that's kind of what got me into trying it. He records a lot of bass, and he uses that distortion plugin all the time, and the mm-hmm. bass tones he came up with were just they were probably. I mean, I'm a bass player first, and just the everything he was coming up with, I was like, this sounds fantastic, and it was just off of that kind of one plugin. It's very good.
Yeah, it's kind of like when I remember when I was first learning Pro Tools, they had that Sansamp plugin, and like all the Nashville guys would put it on their bass tracks, even on like country tunes. So it reminds me of that. It's just got a lot more very like lots of cool different sounds. It's not just kind of a one trick pony. But yeah, it's very fun to mess with.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Okay, cool. So those are kind of our things, you know, like the Pro EQ, the Fat Channel, just because it's such an incredibly broad ranged thing, and what's the distortion called again? I always forget its name.
Red Light Distortion.
It's the Red Light Distortion. Yes, that is absolutely
scandalous.
It. Yeah. Okay. Well, Matt, I guess, you know, we've got next week, we've got to discuss what sort of track we're going to create, because you want to create a different style. We went for Pink Floyd last time. So, so you're going to make us create something different this time, I guess.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. A lot of people called out for an EP, I think, Joe. So maybe we need to continue that. And we've got a lot of synths and drum machines. Maybe we need to go a bit more electronic. Again, you know, I think recording some hardware like the, you know, the synths that aren't in, you know, that are not plugins. So we're actually recording some physical audio and then sort of maybe messing around with those, either plugins or whatever, I think could be quite good. I because obviously when we're recording, or when you did the synths on the original track, Joe, obviously it's just MIDI notes. So it's like, oh, if I kind of want to extend this note or change this one, you know, I've just got to do it here. But I kind of like doing something a little bit more in the moment. So who knows?
I'm a big fan of recording things in via MIDI, especially by Studio One, because Studio One does two things. The MIDI interface is very, very good, and the free synthesizers that it comes with are very good, as well as all the stuff we get on Sphere is kind of fantastic. And then just the ease with which I can switch I can switch everything from the plugins from read to write, and then I can real-time manipulate the controls as I would a real-world synth, just to give kind of depth and creativity to synth parts. I find being able to separate when I'm playing in a part and when I'm manipulating the audio of a part to be something that doesn't detract from the organic way that you're recording in a synthesizer part. It adds to it, and you know, I found that very productive and very easy to do. So, you know, I'll probably do some more of that if I'm kind of, you know, I guess I'll be doing a lot of the synth work whilst you sort of, you know, I don't know, wank around on your high end of the old guitar. But,
we'll see. We'll see what comes out.
Exactly. But yes, on the second episode of this series, I guess we'll discuss exactly what sort of track we're going to make. But you know, thank you very much, Joe Gilder, for joining us on this episode and kind of, you know, guiding us and giving us some advice on how to make the most of Studio One. Of course, dear listener, we're recommending that you join us on every episode of this. You know, get yourself the free version of Studio One because it's so good. I mean, most of you probably got it on the last series because we did a lot of stuff that was built in at the time. But get yourself a copy of Studio One. Make a track with us. It's going to be a bunch of fun. This series, me and Matt are going to make the track. But on our next series, I think we're going to try and make something with you guys. So it'd be good if you prepared for that. So we'll see. But of course, you can, you can, as we said, you can get the free version of Studio One via the links on this podcast or by visiting personas.com. And if you want to learn how to use it, then we thoroughly recommend you checking out homestudiocorner.com or checking out any of Joe Gilder's stuff on YouTube. Of course, if you want to sign up to Studio One Sphere, which me and Matt both do, which is a very affordable way to get hold of absolutely everything that Studio One do, then Joe actually has a bunch of exclusive videos in the educational section, the learning section of Studio One Sphere, which is rather good. So we thoroughly recommend you checking that out as well. Thank you very much, Joe, for coming on this episode. It was really great of you to do, and it's been thank you. It's been really good to get to pick your brains over these things, and we'll let you know what sort of weird, ridiculous track we end up with.
I want to hear it for sure.
Yeah, maybe Joe, maybe you do a mix, and then we'll ask you, Joe, Mr. Gilder, to do a mix, and we can compare. and maybe you can offer some tips about how we can make it better. Or maybe not. Maybe Joe will do a perfect job.
I just put distortion on every channel. That's all.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
that's obviously the solution, surely. Anyway, thank you very much, dear listener, for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.